That is trumpeter Freddie Hubbard with Crisis. His illustrious sidemen include Wayne Shorter on tenor sax, Bernard McKinney on euphonium, McCoy Tyner on piano, Art Davis on bass, and Elvin Jones on drums. This is a great jazz standard, by the way. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and I am currently trying to figure out why, for some reason, everything is totally scrambled on my computer. And that is because of trust that the computer people will leave your stuff alone. You know, when they did this so-called update, it was fine up until about half an hour ago. Now, I can't find anything. Everything that was to my liking is no more. So I have no idea. I can't read even my Skype screen. So everything is all messed up, but we move ahead just the same. I tell you, when disaster or tragedy strikes, the natural human reaction is to help. No questions asked, no means tests, no pre-qualifiers. The only concern is helping to improve or solve a dire situation as quickly as possible so that those affected can resume a somewhat normal life. But that's not what we were seeing with Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, two U.S. territories that were torn to shreds and left practically inoperable by Hurricane Maria. They're not the only islands ravaged by the hurricanes, but as U.S. territories, they surely should have been reassured over and over again of help. And that's not what happened. And there are a couple of reasons why, and we ought to look at that. Because in the end, it comes down to the relationship between imperialist countries and their satellites in the Caribbean. It's like being for these island nations in the claws of dragons. And that's no exaggeration. Well, finally, we heard today that Donald Trump has decided to be civilized about this thing. He has decided to lift an onerous 100-year-old law that says that anything coming into a U.S. port and going to another U.S. port must be shipped on ships flying the U.S. flag. You know, that's the explanation. But we do have instances where even this archaic law had been lifted to respond to major disasters. Just because it's on the books doesn't mean that it is absolutely carved in stone. Nothing could be done about it. It must be obeyed as is. Well, initially, Trump gave the explanation that he wasn't going to lift it. He wasn't going to lift this law because people in the shipping business, that's what he said, people in the shipping business had concerns about it. Why? Because it is tied into money. They bring in the freight, they get paid, whoever brings in the freight. But this is, at least I thought it was, a very serious and dire situation. And even the people in the shipping business should have stepped back a bit and should have understood what was the prime concern here, which was the preservation of life. But Trump, being a racist, needed any kind of explanation that he thought would suffice, that would pass muster. He did not count on unrelenting pressure from all over the place, saying, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. How could you hide behind this old, outdated law, and now you're going to stand on the explanation that people in the shipping business were upset about the possibility of lifting the law? It's a stupid law to begin with. But here's a president who prides himself with being a great negotiator, a resolute leader, and he's quaking and hiding. He is spending his time sending out tweets about the NFL rather than pay attention to the fact that people had suffered immense damage from the storm and needed help, and needed help right away. He also said earlier yesterday, he said, do you know where Puerto Rico is? It's in the middle of a big ocean. A big, big ocean. This is the asinine explanation given by the president for holding to a very racist position. He just didn't want to do it. But he comes up with these bizarre explanations. But I have to tell you that all said, even though he's taking a lot of credit for it today, he's telling people and showing people how he responds. And he has responded affirmatively, and he's heeded the pleas. People have to beg him to do the right thing. Well, just for the record, apart from all the pressure brought on all points, they did not back away. The people stood up and insisted that this president act like a human being. But the real hero in all of this, I think, is Senator John McCain. It was John McCain who said, there's an easy way to get help to the people as fast as possible. And that is lifting the policies under this Jones Act. Doing away with that, setting them aside for the time being, and getting down to the business of getting help to the people. He wrote a letter. And this is what it said in part. It is unacceptable to force the people of Puerto Rico to pay at least twice as much for food, clean drinking water, supplies, and infrastructure due to the Jones Act requirements as they work to recover from this disaster. He sent that letter on Tuesday. Now more than ever, he said in the letter, it is time to realize the devastating effect of this policy and implement a full repeal of this archaic and burdensome act. Now, I hope you heard that part well, when he said it would force the people already beleaguered to pay twice as much for necessary supplies and for food and drinking water. Two days later, Trump comes out and he wants to be the hero, but he wasn't the hero. Many members of Congress, the Black and Latino caucus, many people of conscience around the United States, many countries in the world were offended by this president's behavior and his actions. But they are well in keeping with the tenets of white supremacy, racism, imperialism. He was well in line with those precepts by acting the way he did. Cowardly, certainly. You bear down on people who are in a very tenuous situation, and you pile on top of their miseries more miseries. And it is interesting how throughout the United States, within the political leadership, we did not see a mass reaction endorsing the need for this country to behave itself and come to the aid of people who are suffering for no cause of their own. But you know, I don't think Trump realized until very recently that both Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands were, in fact, U.S. territories, and these are Americans. I don't think he knew that. I think he had to be told that. You know, Mr. President, they are fellow Americans. But I want to draw to your attention how this is typical of the experiences of many small countries that are owned, if you will, by the big behemoths of imperialism, of colonialism. They are just, you know, they're just there. They're not fully a part. In fact, they make it a point to call them unincorporated parts of the United States, not because they physically are separate from the United States, but also psychologically, also politically, also in every other sense, economically, every other sense. These small islands are not part of the United States. Puerto Rico, for example, Puerto Ricans can't vote. They're citizens, but they can't vote. They can't vote for the president. They can't participate in the American way of life. They pay a hefty price, no fault of their own. The spoils of war among the big guys, the spoils of war happen to be whatever it is they own. The small nations, the pieces of land they own, they got them. The winner got all. And the people have been paying a price for that ever since. You're not supporting their education. You're not building hospitals. You're not building workable, navigable roads. You're not building their infrastructure. You're not helping them develop, really. So it is arguable that the United States and all of these other, Britain, France, they're all in the Caribbean. The U.S. Virgin Islands used to belong to the Danish countries. They were Danish, a possession of Denmark. You have Curacao, Aruba, Bonaire, owned by the Dutch. It was a free-for-all in the Caribbean. They came down to the Caribbean and totally messed it up. This is hundreds of years ago. War. They go to other countries and fight their wars to claim their countries, to claim the wealth of those tiny nations, to subjugate them to foreign rule with no real benefits. What is the great benefit to Puerto Rico? That it is affiliated, it is a property of the United States of America. What is the net benefit? So this is why Trump's behavior has given us a reason to return to these kinds of questions. And the nations themselves that are affected should be discussing these things. I remarked about the case of Dominica. Very self-sufficient before the British got there, and self-sufficient since the British got there. But it is absolutely contained. It can't sell its own products on the open market. It can't sell its own sugar. It can't sell its own bananas. You have U.S. companies just trying to put out their lights. And Britain, which owned it, okay, the possessor by virtue of warfare of Dominica, helps to the tune of £5 million. That's it. That is it. That and two choruses of God Save Our Gracious Queen and Goodbye. So, the question has to be revisited, and revisited by the small countries themselves. They have to raise the question, and they have to answer the question. Puerto Rico, absolutely. The issue is Puerto Rico going to be a state or not? Why isn't Puerto Rico a state? What is the reason that it is not a state? And therefore will enjoy the same protections as any other state. Puerto Rico has more people, a larger population than Maine, than Rhode Island, and it's the same thing with Washington, D.C. Why isn't Washington, D.C. a state? Because, of course, I relate to it as a colony. It still is a colony of the United States. So it has no rights and privileges of a real state. And what is a common thread among these eight nations. They're black and they're brown. They are perfectly welcome to send their children to die for America, but they can't vote in the Congress. So this I would encourage vigorous discussion of this theme in the communities affected. And we should accelerate the demand for statehood for Puerto Rico or independence. Either way, I mean, cut it clean. The state in which Puerto Rico exists, it's like a zombie. It's neither fish nor fowl. And you're paying a hefty price. Part of the reason, by the way, part of the reason for the so-called debts of Puerto Rico, which Donald Trump ungraciously talked about before addressing the issue of coming to the aid of people suffering. Puerto Rico's debts are largely linked to providing for its people the services that would come to it if it were a state. Puerto Rico had to pay its own bills on that front. So you're going to incur debt. Donald Trump, as I said, should know about debts. He went bankrupt 9 times. And he still owes Puerto Rico more than $30,000 in taxes unpaid. Now, this is where they ought to go. When a tragedy strikes with this impact, enormous impact, we haven't seen anything like this in a long, long time. And your so-called affiliate country is hemming and hawing and hedging and trying to do everything possible to avoid responsibility. And by the way, I want to remind you, I'm not leaving this issue. It's openly racist. Even when Hurricane Harvey struck, white communities in Florida were attended to immediately. Black communities were not. With this kind of a record, we see the open racism. So in a sense, we're all colonies. DC is a colony, straight out. People are just living there until they, you know, ramp up the program and get them removed. Another phase of urban removal. But it's a colony. It has zero participation in the national apparatus of government. It has a symbolic presence in Congress. What it's going through isn't symbolic, it's real. It is not getting the services that its taxes pay for. I remember when I lived in Washington, D.C., I needed to go buy a bed. There was not one furniture store in Washington, D.C. I had to go to Virginia to buy a bed. So you see what I mean? It's like the relationship between a predator and prey. You don't know when they're going to descend on you and try to eat you up. But every day that you get up, you are perfectly aware that you are prey. Puerto Rico deserves to have its own voice. It does not deserve to be treated like this. The U.S. Virgin Islands does not deserve to be treated like this. None of the colonies in the Caribbean or elsewhere, for that matter, none of them deserve to be treated the way they are. For them, the colonial experience is an everyday experience, and it must stop. What then is the advantage of affiliation with the United States? Well, of course, it's not affiliation. Affiliation implies that there is a mutuality of interest and agreement. But you are going to see people in the situation, and you're perfectly comfortable with the idea that they could hang out with this situation even longer because, you know, they're tough. They'll get through it. And that's the extent of your commitment. This president should be called before Congress and shamed. Shamed. It is unacceptable, and I would say it's illegal. It's even illegal to knowingly abrogate your responsibilities like this. You're the big bad United States, and you run around and you throw your weight around everything. When it comes to the issue of doing the right thing, for which you are legally, morally, and constitutionally, I even messed up that word, obligated. Our job as citizens is to see that this country doesn't behave the way it's behaving, and to be loud about it. But more importantly, we should understand the racist nature of the president's behavior, and by the president I mean the country's behavior as well. Because in refusing to confront the president, to confront his administration, to confront members of Congress into moving in the right direction, even by international law, you're supposed to do something immediately, and you have the wherewithal to do it. But we saw it happen here, as I said before. We saw it happen just recently with the same storms. The people in Texas are still in muck and mire in their houses, in predominantly black communities. Mosquitoes are now having a ball, which means they're living under unsafe conditions. The still water has accumulated, and these unhygienic conditions persist. And we haven't heard a word about, well, what progress has been made in cleaning up all the damage done for failure to put in place a system that would attenuate the impact of floods and so forth. That's a failure. That's a systemic failure. And now we have the failure of the country and the worst and most stupid explanations as to why it couldn't do its job, why it would not respond immediately. It's not that they lack the means. It's not that they can't do it safely. It's not that the storm is still raging and it would be unsafe to send ships out. None of this is true. We have a racist in the White House. And he's pandering to racists in the United States, in Congress and in his political base and elsewhere. Let them suffer. Let them die. That would be a good thing. More land for us. More summer vacations for us. More hotels when we visit. So I wanted to draw your attention. This is not Donald Trump's doing. In large measure, this is John McCain trying to find some kind of a bureaucratic way to get around what clearly is an intention by the president, who can easily, because he has the authority to do it, he doesn't have to give a reason to do it, he just has to do it. And we should never forget these things. Because by extension, the Latinos and the Africans in the U.S. Virgin Islands, in Puerto Rico, they're the people who are here too. And everywhere that the United States deals with, by extension. So, I'm infuriated by it, but I also believe we need to learn from this. We need to see what is happening for what is happening. At the root of it is a racist mindset. Well, I'll move on, but maybe I should take a couple of calls first. Let's do that. Let's take a couple of calls. Who's on the line? I can't see. Hello, you're on the air. By the way, the number is 888-874-4888.
Good morning. Is this coming
this
through?
This is Eutrice.
Oh, good morning, Eutrice. I tell you, it's a singular honor to be speaking with you from Alaska, of all places. I am a very, very dedicated fan of yours. You bring a brightness of intellect and discourse that is sorely lacking on so much of even radio, alternative radio. Yeah, I'm just thrilled that I'm able to get your program online every day.
I thank you for that. I really am appreciative.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. You are so deserving of it. A voice like yours in the wilderness in which we're living these days is you're a light shining for many of us who are otherwise bereft of hope. I've been telling friends in the British Virgin Islands about your program lately, and hoping they are getting aboard and getting an opportunity to listen. One friend in particular, who had her house totally explode around her, she woke up in a closet, and that was all that was essentially left standing of her very nice home that she had worked to build, and they're just enduring horrible, horrible things right now, and we're offering encouragement to her via Facebook and others as well. But you're bringing up the important points of the structure of our entire society, civilization under capitalism, and the excesses to which it's now gone to exploit people, even in these most horrid of conditions. It's just unthinkable. But therein lies the gift of Trump. And I kind of thought it might go this way, in waking people up, finally getting them off their lazy butts and say, hey, we have a voice in this. We've got to do something about it. And therein I have some hope that this is it, you know, get up or get out. This is the last chance, because they're locking down the system on us so hard. And what is going on in Puerto Rico is an offshoot of what vulture capitalists like Paul Singer did in the Congo, in Argentina, and all over the world, where they get away by buying up bonds and then demanding of the people that they end up paying for the mistakes of the past that have been forced on them by policy, pretty much, that they end up going in this terrible hole. So Puerto Rico has become a private colony of Wall Street, like so many other places, and it's just terrible. A point I wanted to bring up with you as a retired sailor of the United States Merchant Marine, amongst my commercial fishing career and everything else, is this is not the first time John McCain's gone after the Jones Act, and his motives are opportunistic. I think they're opportunistic, because the positive aspects of the Jones Act are it protects the U.S. sailors from having everything offshored and turned over to the slave labor that exists in worldwide shipping. I worked with these people. I know what it's like to have Filipino and Bangladeshi crews under the whip of Japanese officers on vessels. It's the only protection that exists where they can make a living in conditions otherwise intolerable that third world sailors put up with. And it's a damn shame that it's come to this. But there is no problem getting a waiver to the Jones Act. That is the issue that steps out to me most of all, is cut that off in an emergency. It can be done. And it's what should have been done already, as we well know, as moral people. And go forward from there, but stop with all this other crap. You know, it's just appalling. I mean, to any thinking, sentient person. So I guess that's essentially what I wanted to say, but I'd like to shout out to Kasuba Bitters of British Virgin Island, my dear friend who's been through hell and is now enduring more of it. But thank you so much for your program.
Thank you for calling in and sharing that. I really appreciate it. Hello, you're on the air. This is PRN, and you're listening to Lead Stories.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, yes. Greetings to the beloved family, and always to you, Eutrice. But I really appreciate your update that John McCain, I'm glad you made him prominent, was able to get this waiver. And I would say that with your explanation, they need to dump the Jones Act for in its entirety forever, because you were pointing out how, you know, for ordinary goods, a can of milk or what have you, they pay extraordinary prices. So, you know, it's the same colonial type of a situation. I was on a program earlier, the sister station, talking about the type of genocide that could be so easily possible if, you know, the forces don't really pull together to provide relief to Puerto Rico in particular, because, like those of us who follow such stories, like if there's an EMP, which is an electromagnetic pulse, which could come from a nuclear weapon, even one that's not, say, fully detonated, or even a solar flare, and the grid goes down in this country, they say that 90% of the people won't survive. So it's a dire situation in Puerto Rico, and I'm so glad that you featured it in the, at the beginning of the program. I just want to also send out my greetings and love to Sister Michelle. And Sister, as you said, Utrecht, you do not have to apologize or tell us about your education, because like you said, that's probably for the better, so she could really get educated. That's in sync, and I'm so glad she fleshed that out with what I was saying, and I had brought up Cohen, Secretary of Defense Cohen, in some particular past time, where he talked about that in 2025, the goal would be the owning, meaning controlling, of the weather. So, yes, what Michelle detailed for us so wonderfully, it absolutely exists. In fact, I got to mention Michelle, I think she was from White Plains, if I correct. I got to bring her up on Coast to Coast because Dane Wigginton, the one who she referenced, who has a PNR program and who has a, the geoengineering watch, I got to bring that up with Dane. He was with Jimmy Church, the guest host, on the weekend, I guess, recent weekend. And he was really breaking it down. Now, I got cut off at some point with the guest host, Jimmy Church, when I was just describing some of the features of Donald Trump, including Richard Spencer, his neo-Nazi supporter, referring to him as vulgar. So I'll deal with that at some point. But,
we want to move along because we have some.
I just want to just make this last point. At the end of the program, Dane picked up on how I was cut off in my comment, which doesn't happen with George Norrie when I can get through. And he referenced the problem being such a dire situation, but the tribe, the tribalism and program ideology. And that's the last point I want to make, because that says it right there.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for your call today and your contribution. Hello, Gwen, you're on the air. Well, the clock is. Somebody's clock is on the air. Well, let's take the next caller. You're on the air. Okay. Well, I wanted to mention another thing, and it looks like I'll have time to do it if I do it real fast. And that concerns our dear sister Michelle Obama making a comment that any woman who voted against Hillary Clinton voted against her own voice, their own voice. That's what she said at a marketing kind of convention in Boston. I was so flabbergasted by that. I'm still trying to make sense of that statement. That Michelle Obama would say that any woman who voted against her when she was running against Donald Trump voted against her own voice. Now, you see, this, I have an issue. I think I've shared it with you many times. I have a problem with what people define as feminism. And it should have occurred to Michelle Obama as a feminist that women should have the right to vote however they wish to, whether they voted for Hillary or whether they voted for Donald Trump. But to now pronounce and denounce at the same time women who voted for Trump as voting against their own voice, I don't get it. And I don't get it that you suddenly are so supportive of Hillary Clinton. Now, that is what freaked me out. I was so sure that Michelle Obama was familiar with the history, the anti-feminist history of Hillary Clinton. The genocidal acts committed in the name of the foundation, the corruption, the fraud. In fact, we just talked about it yesterday. As one of the directors of the largest unprosecuted fraud in U.S. history, I would imagine you'd want to keep your distance from somebody like that. So I'm curious to know what occasioned this opportunity to bond with Sister Hillary, between Sister Hillary and Michelle Obama. What's happening that Michelle Obama suddenly has a massive interruption of her memory? This is a person, to get it very personal, this was a person who virulently attacked your husband, Michelle. Said all kinds of nasty things about him. How he needed on-the-job training. He was incompetent. He didn't know what he was doing. He had no business running for the presidency. And now, it's all sweetness and light. I got to know what it is you're on. I got to take some of that. This is just, it was just out of nowhere. At a former first lady treated so terribly by another first lady, should now publicly profess a kind of her strong support. Is it because there has been a series of meetings and Michelle Obama and Barack Obama presumably are on board with whatever is going on or will be going on, as in yet another campaign by Hillary Clinton for the presidency? Well, what is going on here? But this tells you that in politics, it's all about what works for the moment, what is of great advantage to you at a particular moment in your political life. You could overlook anything. You can overlook anything. But I'm now on notice. I'm going to look very carefully, very deeply, to find out what caused this epiphany in Michelle Obama to now arrive at the position where she's wagging her finger to other women, saying, if you voted for Trump, you voted against your voice. What does that mean? I don't know. But if you're a feminist, at least you would allow for women to make up their own minds, whether they voted for Trump or whether they voted for Hillary Clinton. And I have a sneaky suspicion that voting for Trump might have been a far more judicious choice than voting for Hillary Clinton. The woman is a crook. She has done so much damage in the black world. Her husband inaugurated the largest prison industrial system in the world. This was the woman who said she had, you know, the nation has to bring young black men to heel. They're super predators. None of this registers with you as something that you need to keep in mind. And now you're so comfortable with the woman and her history that you could now assail women for choosing Trump. Well, all I could say is it definitely signals that something deep is happening, and we ought to get to know what that is. I'm intrigued by the sudden conversion of Michelle Obama. I understand the conversion of her husband. You know, that's a political thing. Supposedly you were above the fray. You didn't get too involved in politics and you maintained a healthy distance, et cetera, et cetera. But now to come out brazenly like that and to tell off women, your sisters, that they spoke against their own voice in choosing not to vote for Hillary Clinton. Well, we have to have this change of political understanding explained. This is a very serious matter. We have to find out if something is wrong with Michelle. Something might be wrong with Michelle, her ability to reason, her memory, all these things, the acts of the great feminist against your husband and you are suddenly forgiven. Oh my. See, politics is also about love and forgiveness. Love and forgiveness. Yes, yes, yes. You can go beyond the injuries of Hillary Clinton, not just to you and your family and your husband, but to all people of conscience. Especially feminists should find it objectionable that a woman presuming to be presidential material, running for president, would not behave in a certain way. You know, they would want to believe that in voting for a woman, that the standards somehow will change. The standards from the old order will change. That you would get a more humane. And that's a sexist thing, too, to say, because I know many men who have run humane political activities and parties. They've tried, and they tried their best. So it's not a thing to assume that a woman automatically will improve government. Not at all. Hillary Clinton would not have been an improvement in any way in as the head of state of the United States. And by the way, it should not be forgotten that she's still under the threat of several indictments for being so crooked. And the half has not been told about Hillary Clinton. That doesn't bother me. She's a known entity in many ways. But this sudden announcement by Michelle Obama, it certainly startled me. And it now makes me want to look into what could be the relationship now between the Obamas and the Clintons that would cause such a dramatic reversal in her point of view. Well, thanks a lot for listening today. I really appreciate it. I can't see anything on my screen. I don't know what this is. Maybe they have it in for me, but this is a relatively new system. It's not even 2 years old. And so I'm puzzled as to why it's misbehaving like this and doing it, especially when I'm on the air. I don't appreciate that at all. So thank you so much for your patience. And the whole thing is, even when you're in the middle of an annoying situation, just keep going. Just keep going. It will be all right in the end. So I will now turn my attention to trying to fix whatever it is I think I could fix. And hopefully we will go on from there tomorrow. See you tomorrow. And thank you again for listening. Bye-bye.